Let's begin with Ecclesiastes, and this morning we're going to be talking about pleasure, or maybe a better way to describe this is to say that we're going to be talking about self-indulgence. And I ask you to read verses 1 through 11. This is from the American Standard Translation. I know many of you read from different translations. And if your translation helps us in a particular place, then by all means, speak up. Speak up from home, but let us know. We're trying to understand what Solomon says about self-indulgence. It's verse one. He says, and we're going to go back and we'll look at this more particularly, but let's just set the stage here. I said in my heart, come now, I'll prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I searched in my heart how to cheer my flesh with wine, my heart yet guiding me with wisdom, how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men, that they should do under heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made the gardens and parks. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water them therefrom, the forest where the trees were reared. I bought men servants and maid servants and had servants born in my house. I had great possessions and herds and flocks above all that were before me in Jerusalem. I gathered me also silver and gold and the treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, all the delights of the sons of men, musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced because of all my labor, and this was my portion from all my labor. I looked on all the works that my hands had made, on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind. There was no profit under the sun. So I asked you a couple of questions after you had read this, and before, what we're trying to do is answer these questions after we do the reading and before we look at the lesson that we're going to discuss. So let's just get some feelings about these questions. In relation to his stated purpose is to know what is good for man. Why did Solomon try pleasure? Not what did he learn. Why do you think he tried pleasure?
He wanted satisfaction.
Uh-oh. That is the demonstration of my problem this morning. You have to shout so I can hear you.
He wanted satisfaction.
Okay, satisfaction. What else?
Reward for all of his hard work and labor.
Okay, reward. What else? Did anybody else find it strange that Solomon said, if this is Solomon, and I'm not sure that it was, but he said, I progressed beyond all that were king before me in Jerusalem. How many kings had been before Solomon in Jerusalem, by the way?
Just one.
His father, David. Solomon succeeded David. Saul didn't reign from Jerusalem. So David is the only person that he's comparing himself to. Now, David's reign was indeed a tremendous period in Israel's history, but there was a lot of difficulty that was associated with David's reign. There was a lot of rebellion. There were a lot of enemies that had to be put down. I just find it strange that Solomon said, I was greater than all who had been king in Jerusalem before me. I tend to think that the writer is someone who is assuming the persona of Solomon as a teacher. It may be Solomon, and maybe that's what he's saying. I found that a strange comment. So any other thoughts about why he would try pleasure? Yeah.
Well, everybody, that's what everybody wants to put their focus on, is I want to feel good. And if you're going to choose to see wisdom in things, is there any wisdom in what everybody strives for?
Okay. Good point, Lee.
Because it's there.
Because it's there. Kind of like the Edmund Hillary, why do you climb mountains? Because that's the highest place. Why do you ride banks? Because that's where the money is. Yeah, John.
Yeah, maybe a pursuit of greatness.
A pursuit of greatness. How so?
Just by, you know, all the things that he could show people that he had, and all the accomplishments that he had made.
Okay. Could be. Could be that there would be some fame associated with this. Yeah, Carol.
We're on the same line. It's the carrot and the stick. You know, these things, the carrot, it wants us to, entices us to do those things. And that's what life is full of. I mean, there are full of things that make the eye happy.
Okay. Okay.
We seek pleasure because it's immediate. Happens right now.
Okay, that's a good point. It happens now. I mean, that's kind of the reason we have so much trouble sticking to diets, right? I know I'm not supposed to eat a whole bag of Oreo cookies for lunch, because if I do that, that's what gives me cholesterol. Okay. Why do I eat the Oreo cookies? Because they taste good. If they didn't taste good, I wouldn't eat them. There are some things that I don't eat. But things that I'm not supposed to eat, those are the things that taste good. So what does Solomon try? What does he characterize as being pleasure? Okay, laughter. Okay. When he says he's trying mirth or laughter, is it that he tells jokes or, you know, things that strike him as funny? Or is it something else?
Well, it's a little of both, I would think.
A little of both. What do you mean?
Well, they had entertainment for people to make them laugh.
Okay.
But when you're hanging out with your friends and you're having a good time and you're enjoying yourself, you laugh. Because, you know, so.
Okay.
I felt that to be a funny one just because I like laughter. Laughter is happy for the heart. Like,
any other thoughts about laughter, about folly? Whoa, 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 whoa. One at a time. I have trouble hearing one at a time. So now nobody's going to talk? Come on, guys.
He wanted to see how laughter... What made it so fun that they were doing it? He wanted to find out how they felt so that he could do it. But he always does it with wisdom.
Okay. Hang on to that thought that he does it with wisdom. We're going to come back to that. Okay. So laughter. I saw this as Solomon saying, I decided to be the class clown. Have you ever been around somebody who just couldn't take anything seriously? I think that's what he's saying. He's not saying that I tried laughter. I tried funny things. I tried non-serious things. I think he's saying I decided I wasn't ever going to be serious. And I've known some people that were like that. Nothing is ever serious. And you get a little frustrated because you're talking to them and you say, wait a minute, we need to have a serious conversation here. But what else did he try? Yeah, Bob.
He counterbalanced mirth with pleasure, though.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, I'm not sure what I mean. You know, mirth to me is like lightheartedness. And pleasure is also, it's an emotion that each and every one of us have, and we enjoy it and seek it out. Nowadays, we call it recreation.
Okay.
And it says, I prove to you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. Well, so that doesn't really fit with me, with your idea of him being the class clown.
Okay.
You know, people get really tired of being around the class clown pretty quickly.
Can you get tired of people who everything is about recreation?
Sure.
Probably. Anything else that he associates with this pursuit of pleasure or self-indulgence? Yeah, Carol.
I think back to the laughing, you know. They say that if you're unhappy, that if you smile and just work at smiling, even though you don't feel like smiling, it can change your countenance. So it's a change in the countenance that laughter can bring more than smiling. And there's a focus on maybe even being able to change your circumstance because you're focusing on the laughter or the happiness.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that, but that's really interesting. Could it be that he's saying, in everything, I wanted to see the good side?
You talk about the punishment that he had was all the rebellion in his family. I mean, look at that. I mean, with his brothers and his father and everything with David, and it's just, there's a lot of history back there.
Yeah, that's true.
And it comes up.
That's true. And you want to look on the good side. I just was able to attend a life celebration for Bruce Hant. Bruce was the best man at my wedding, and his son had just died. And one of the things that impressed me about the life celebration is we only think about the good things. And maybe that's what Solomon was saying. I don't know. Anything else? Yeah, Bob.
And this, what you have on the screen there says, I made me, great works, I made me. I can't imagine a person like Solomon actually being hands-on with that. He spoke and had people do it, and I can see where, for me, that would really be vanity because I didn't put anything into it.
Yeah, you're a hands-on kind of guy.
Yeah, so that's how I relate to it. Maybe I'm all wet. I think Dean would agree with that.
Yeah, Dean is pretty much a hands-on kind of guy. I think there's something very pleasurable about doing something and actually finishing the job. Something gratifying about being able to fix something. Or build something. I'm all thumbs. So if I try to build something, it's not likely to bring much pleasure. Not likely to work. But that is an interesting concept. I don't think Solomon actually got out there and dug cisterns and planted trees. I think he probably said, go plant me a tree.
No, but there is pleasure in doing. And I think in our society today, we kind of look up, down on those people that enjoy the doing. But even
okay.
The writer here tells us that, you know, you've got labor to do, go enjoy it, because that's your lot.
Okay, good point. Let's see. I saw a hand back here. Was it you, James? Did you raise your hand? Okay.
Sometimes mirth is an escape from reality.
Okay. Okay. How so?
Well, you try to pass it off as funny, but it's really serious. You do that all the time. Lots of people can do that easily.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. Sometimes we deal with difficult things by cracking a joke. Does anybody remember what Ronald Reagan said when they're wheeling him into surgery after he'd been shot? He asked the doctor if he was a Republican. Maybe that's his way of deflecting or escaping the fact that he's been shot and is seriously injured. And we sometimes do that. Anything else?
Solomon was over here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you. You've got to move over here. You got to sit in the other wrong spot.
You know sign language?
It's sign language. Throw something at me.
Anyway, Solomon was in a unique situation. Everything had always been handed to him, even while he was the son of the king. So he had everything handed to him, and because he had so much stuff that he had gathered up. If you go back and you can read in Chronicles, I think it is, how much he had coming in from foreign sources in a period of a year. It's mind-boggling. But by the day, he must have been taxing the people too, because their main complaint was they were almost bankrupt. He had put so much burden on them, and it was one of the reasons why, the kingdom split.
No.
Eventually over that.
Good point.
And so he had all these things, all incredible. So he must have had great pride in his accomplishments, and maybe he went out and walked around and said, well, I better go see how these guys are doing today. Yeah, hey, they're doing a good job. So he felt good about that and happy. And so he tried doing more. He had an unlimited income. So, you know, why not spend it? And I think that he was searching for that satisfaction. I don't think he ever found it.
Well, and that's something that we're real familiar with. We have such an abundance in our country that it's almost hard for us to find pleasure in something simple. You know, I think of kids on Christmas morning, and you're just ripping through all the packages, you know, and you're so excited, and you got presents coming out your ears, And I, you know, I have read stories about the Depression, and you got a sock puppet, you know, and that was the big deal. And you could appreciate getting a sock doll. And now we sometimes we have so much that we can't appreciate it. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, go ahead.
There's nothing wrong with seeking pleasure as long as it isn't or leads to sin.
Okay. Can you expand on that? Well, this is what Solomon calls hevel. It's not what he tried wasn't sin. And I think there are a couple of indications of that. The first is his wisdom didn't desert him. He did all of this with wisdom. Okay? I don't think what he was trying was sinful. It was just hevel. Yeah, Ted.
As long as that pleasure does not become your idol and your main focus, then I, as Solomon pointed out, there's nothing wrong with it. It's vanity. It doesn't really get you anywhere. It doesn't get you any closer to God, but you're not committing sin as long as it doesn't become your idol.
Good point. This idea, that's really the point of hevel. If you read through Proverbs, you get the impression from Proverbs that if you do what's right, you're going to be blessed. That's the point of Proverbs. Do what's right, you will be blessed. And it doesn't always work out that way. So, Ecclesiastes is Solomon saying, it didn't work out that way. What do I need to understand so that I can make sense out of everything in life that I see? And some things are hevel. They're not worth building a life on. These things don't obviate all of the losses that we have. They're not sufficient to organize your life around. And I think that's what Solomon is saying. I don't think it was, like Ted said, I don't think it was sin. I think he was just saying, you know, I tried all this stuff and it wasn't worth building my life around. It didn't ultimately answer the questions. And we all have questions. You know, we read through the book of Proverbs. You do what's right, you'll be blessed. And you don't have to go very far to see people that live a totally ungodly life, and it looks like they're getting a lot of blessings. Right? And I know people... Well, we don't have to go very far. Just within our congregation, think of the number of people among our group or close friends of our group that are suffering from cancer. You know, eat a good diet and you won't have high blood pressure. Now, some people get high blood pressure anyway. Yeah, Margaret?
The problem with all of that stuff up there is that God has set eternity in our hearts. And that's where we're trying to find contentment and pleasure. And these things just don't cut it.
Yeah, that's the point. This stuff is hevel. That's the word that's translated vanity. And I don't like vanity, that translation. Because we have so many unfortunate connotations that are attached to vanity. But it's just hevel. It's like you say, it won't satisfy this God-given awareness of creation. And it won't satisfy this God-given awareness of right and wrong. You can't resolve the issues of right and wrong with heaven. And that's, I think that's what he's trying to do. I love the way he says, I bought men servants, maid servants. I had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions. Then in verse 8, he says, I gat me men singers. That's a, he was from the South. So he said, I get it. Anything else? Yeah, Bob.
I'm not familiar with that term hevel that you're talking
It's about. The hevel is the word in Hebrew. And
the word for vanity?
That's the word that vanity comes from. That's how King James translated heaven. They said it's vanity.
Lee said that the American Standard says meaningless.
Meaningless. Some other modern translations say it's like smoke. Yeah.
It is fleeting. It's there, but it's soon gone.
It just doesn't last. That's part of it. You know. Smoke is kind of like that. If you've ever reached out to try to grab smoke, you grab it and it just, it's gone. It's not there. Yeah, Ben.
Part of the definition there is transitory and unsatisfactory.
Yeah, transitory. Very temporary. He also had great riches. And that's not going to explain it either. Okay. So let's go back and let's see. What's the general conclusion about having pleasure as a person's goal in life? This is odd because when I looked at this, it looks like he puts the conclusion first, and then all of the reasoning that got him to the conclusion follows. He said in verse 1, I said in my heart, come now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also was vanity. This also was heaven. This also was temporary. It's meaningless. Okay. So I think what he does is he puts the conclusion first and then the reasoning that would get him to the conclusion follows that. Just an odd construction. Usually the conclusion comes at the end. So drinking is one of the things that Solomon tries. What's the Bible say about drinking? And drinking here means drinking alcoholic things. And I don't think that drinking is limited to the ingestion of alcohol. The broad term is pharmacopoeia, and it's anything that affects the consciousness. So the Bible doesn't talk about marijuana. It doesn't talk about heroin. It doesn't talk about morphine. It doesn't talk about fentanyl. But all of those things are kind of lumped together in this broad category of mind-altering things. So what's the Bible say about drinking? Drunkenness is a sin. Do you think that when Solomon pursued pharmacopoeia, the mind-altering substances, that he did it to the point of drunkenness.
Then he did it with wisdom, so he must have been watching.
Okay.
What he was doing, trying to find the fine line to make sure he wouldn't slip over it.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that he didn't slip over it, but that when he just decided that he slipped over it, that he's ratcheting himself back to not doing that.
Okay.
Wise enough, he would have done it in moderation.
Okay. Does moderation have an impact here? Yeah, Bob.
By the same idea, he wouldn't have had all the wives and concubines if he were applying wisdom.
Whoa.
Because that was his ultimate goal.
700 wives and 300 concubines. 1,000 women in his life. I have trouble with one. Well, I had trouble really with three because I had two daughters and they ganged up on me. But that's interesting because as you go through here, we kind of vacillate back and forth thinking, well, he was kind of experimenting with sin, but labor is not sin. So we're not quite sure whether we want to call what he was doing sin, or and drunkenness is clearly sin. You know, when you use the mind altering drugs to the point of drunkenness, you have sin. Yeah. Go ahead.
In Proverbs 20. Proverbs 21, verse 1, it says, wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is intoxicated by it, not wise.
Okay, that's back to the wisdom point that Carol was making. And we're familiar with this. Any mind-altering drug can turn you from a rational person to an irrational person. Okay. And I think we're understanding. I mean, hey, we're right there on the cutting edge. We decided to decriminalize psilocybin, magic mushrooms, and we decriminalized marijuana. Okay. Alcohol. There's all kinds of things, and we're beginning to learn that the limits to which these things can be ingested may not be where we thought the limits were. So it's just something to think about.
We can say now, out of all of this, he's got his hand in, he's working with these folks. I mean, he's the one that's trying to get us to where he wants us, not to where God wants us.
Okay.
Yes. You
know? So okay. I'm not sure that you could hear that at home. Carolyn's point is, what we're trying to do is get to where God wants us to be, and the question is whether this is going to help us get to where God wants us to be. Okay, good point. Yeah, Carol.
Solomon is, this sort of reminds me of the person who spent their whole life and retires from a job and he's after the job and it's like, I've got nothing.
Yeah, he dies the next year.
Well, but he has nothing from the job. It increased nothing for his spirit, and that's why.
Yeah. Working is good. And but understand it's heaven. It's working is not going to fill the hole that you have in your soul that can only be filled by eternity. So I think that's what Solomon is saying. I don't think he's saying, and we're running out of time. This is, it seems like this is always my problem. I run out of time. I think I'm going to break that buzzer back there. But last question, is Solomon saying that it's useless to work? No, it's not. It's not useless. It's just pebbling. It can't deal with the observation that we need to deal with.